Module 9, Identifying Your Need. Creating a civil working environment begins with knowing what exactly are the needs of the organization and its employees. While general principles about civility can always be created, different companies have different needs. In this module, you will be presented with tools you can use to identify the need for civility in your organization. These tools are observation, focus groups, and anonymous surveys. Completing a needs analysis. If you want to design a program on civility that is customized to the unique needs of your workplace, the first thing that you need to do is conduct a needs analysis. What is a needs analysis? Needs analysis is the process of gathering, interpreting, and evaluating data related to the requirements of the company in terms of accomplishing a certain goal. Needs analysis is typically associated with the development of training and coaching programs. Consider the following illustration. To address the high rate of absenteeism in the accounts department of a company, a needs analysis can be conducted. Perhaps the company can interview the top absentees to find out if they have something in common, a problem that has to be addressed. If, for example, low motivation due to low compensation is the most common reason for employees failing to turn up at work, then perhaps it's time that management comes up with a much more attractive compensation package. There are many techniques that you can use to conduct needs analysis, and three of them will be discussed in greater detail later in this module. Among the most common techniques for gathering data that is being used in needs analysis are survey questionnaires, interviews, focus group discussion, observation, consultation with team leaders and supervisors, standardized examinations, case reports, project debriefings, review of related literature. Focus groups. A focus group, also called focus group discussion, FGD, is a research method that aims to gather qualitative data through non-threatening, semi-structured discussion of a specific topic or question. A focus group discussion is managed by a skilled facilitator who both attends to content and process. The latter is particularly important as the quality of data gathered can be heavily influenced by group dynamics, such as the monopoly of the floor by dominant group members. The average focus group discussion lasts for about 1 hour to 1.5 hours. What's good about this technique is that it helps surface answers that can only come about through a discussion. This is as opposed to data gathered through structured interviews and surveys, which is limited only to the answers to the questions asked, or as much as space will allow. Focus groups can also be a cost-effective way of gathering the opinion of the majority. If you choose your participants randomly, you don't need to ask every employee's take on the situation. For a focus group discussion to be effective, it's best to limit the number of participants to less than 10 people. Anything more and you sacrifice the fertilization of ideas. That is, the process of ideas building upon each other without straying from the topic. Anything less and you don't get a healthy debate or diverse points of view. It is also important to carefully choose the focus group question, that is, the topic the group will discuss, and define from the very onset the parameters of the discussion so that the talks will never go outside of topic. Focus group discussions can be an effective method to gather data about critical incidents in the workplace, such as harassment and bullying. The relaxed and non-threatening atmosphere during focus group discussions helps establish the rapport needed to approach sensitive topics. If controversial personalities are taken out of the group, then perhaps group members will feel freer in discussing their grievance. Note that data gathered during focus group discussions are still tentative and must not be considered as fact without further research and analysis. Observations. When it comes to data that may negatively reflect on oneself or on other people, face-to-face interviews and written surveys may yield inaccurate results. If anything, these survey methods measure respondents' attitudes, attitudes that don't necessarily translate to actual behavior. Second, there is also the element of consciously or unconsciously wanting to appear socially acceptable. Responses may skew to side of consistent civil behavior when in reality, the opposite is true. And lastly, there are actions that people are just not aware of or considerations that survey respondents may not find relevant to mention. For example, an employee may be answering a customer's query wrong all the time said employee thinks his or her answer is right. To best gather data about the actual behaviors of persons in a workplace, observation as a research technique is recommended. You can observe various areas in the organization incognito and see how employees react when they think that no one is watching. Or you can pretend to be a customer or visitor and see how you'll be treated. There are two ways you can go about observation as a research methodology. Number one, you can immerse yourself in the company culture and observe behaviors without any preconceived notions of what you're looking for or a working hypothesis to direct your study. This may actually lead you to a finding that you are not expecting or a more complete picture of the situation. Number two, you can conduct observational research with an idea as to what you're looking for. You may even summarize your observations using checklists and other structured ways of organizing data. As mentioned, observation is an excellent way of gathering data about the practice of civility in a workplace. With observation, you can observe a culture in vivo, but notice that there are also limitations to observation as well. For one, you need an observer that is not only vigilant and capable, but also free from any perceptual bias. Second, you have to take caution in generalizing your observations. What you saw may just be an isolated event and doesn't represent the norm. For best results, apply the scientific method when making observations. Example, choose several times at random to make observations. Triangulate every data you gather with other sources of information. Anonymous surveys. Anonymous surveys, as the term implies, are written surveys or face-to-face interviews where the researcher and perhaps the reader of the final report is kept blind as to who gave the particular responses. A survey can be made anonymously by simply omitting space for the name of the respondent in the survey form. Anonymous surveys can also be conducted by asking a third-party consultant to conduct interviews. Anonymous surveys are highly recommended when gathering data about uncivil behavior in the workplace. Respondents are not always willing to volunteer information about uncivil behavior in a company for fear that investigators will get back at them for reporting their transgressions. Given that most instigators are persons in authority, being identified as a whistleblower can result to getting fired or receiving a scathing performance review. Anonymity can also encourage a respondent to provide responses that represent socially unacceptable behavior. For instance, asking an employee whether or not they have ever delivered obscenities to a client can be tricky business. Anonymity will make it more likely that a respondent will say yes. Note, though, that anonymous surveys can be a double-edged sword. Anonymous anonymity can also increase the likelihood of respondents lying or exaggerating certain accounts. If an answer can't be traced back to you, then you basically can get away with anything. Surveys also make it difficult to follow up with people based on their responses. For instance, anonymous surveys can tell you if a person in the company has ever received sexual innuendo from a supervisor, but you'll be out of luck if you want to invite this person for an interview in order to get more information. Case study. Company ABC has been referred to a training consultant because of the high rate of stress-related illness among its employees. The stress is hypothesized to be due to something happening in the organization, as the employees had lower stress levels before starting work for the company. To assess training needs, the consultant asked every employee to accomplish a daily stress log for a period of 4 weeks. In the stress log, employees must document the stress symptom that they experienced, the exact time and place they experienced the symptom, and what was going on around them at the time. The consultant also interviewed the company physician to get his take on the situation. From the stress diaries, it seemed that the most common trigger of stress among the employees is the presence of a particular supervisor. Follow-up interviews of the respondent reveal that the said supervisor tends to shout orders at his staff, even when the staff is within distance that is conducive to a conversational tone. The supervisor also tends to get personal when it comes to his feedback. For example, he wouldn't hesitate to attack an employee's intelligence when judging his or her performance. The interview with the physician confirmed that the employee's symptoms are more from emotional than physical stress. The consultant came up with the following recommendations after her needs analysis. Require the manager to attend a seminar workshop on civility in the workplace, preferably with an emphasis on sensitivity and courteous downward communication. One-on-one coaching on these skills is also a good idea. Educate staff members on emotional management and stress management skills.